Blog Talk Radio.
Ta-da. And we're live. Yeah, I forgot about that. It's 70 degrees here in Zephyr Hills. It is 5 p.m. in Colorado. Yay! Oh, and midnight, as always, in London when we start the show. So hello to everybody staying up late in London. We appreciate you joining us.
Yes, and, we do.
And actually that side of Europe, because tonight we are talking about Southern Europe. And South Europe. Yeah, I wrote down three before, but we need to get on with the program. We have an intro coming up, and we'll be right back. Ron is with us tonight. It's all about wine. And Blog Talk Radio, it's all about wine, coming up in about tonight.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Hey, that's you.
Yes. Only it's not me.
The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com. It's All About Wine, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
The labels themselves are, like I said, they become an art form.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine, or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing, and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine. And now, please welcome Ron.
Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. Is there something after this? Yes, sir. Two, one. Woohoo! It's Southern Europe show tonight, all about Southern Europe wines. We're talking Greece, Malta, Turkey, Cyprus.
Oh, you got it, yeah.
West Shore, International Mall,
yeah.
International Airport.
International Airport, yeah. There's all the southern part, yeah. McGill, yeah.
Miami, yeah. There you go.
Miami.
Fort Myers.
Yeah, yeah. Which is Miami Super Bowl this coming Sunday. So
yes,
all of you sports fans out there,
definitely.
Super Bowl, American football. Bus people, good. Glad to hear they're here.
Yes, they're a lively bunch tonight.
Yeah.
Sure.
We got American football coming up, our big game, mm-hmm, Sunday evening. So one of the most watched sporting events around the world.
Wow.
It's somewhat exciting. It's right down the state from us.
And neither one of us are going.
Neither one of us are going. Even one of us right in town.
That's
neither
right.
One of us right now. And they do hold it there periodically, and we don't go to that either.
I just thought of that. Yeah, we didn't go to the here.
No, actually, we avoid the area when it's here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So come on down.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So.
That's right. We got a lot of information on Southern Europe, I guess.
We're talking about Southern Europe tonight. It's interesting. Sounds interesting stuff. I don't know. It might not take up the whole hour, so if it doesn't, then I may talk a little bit about South Africa, which we'll cover next week.
Okay.
So there's a little preview for next week. It's going to be South Africa. But we'll talk about Southern Europe. Thing is with Southern Europe, it's very, very, very old wine-growing regions. It's amazing. Some of the earliest wine-growing regions of mankind were in Southern Europe and that areas of the world. Area is just rich with history of wine and people. Greece being heads and shoulders above everyone else as far as wine. If we're going to talk about wine in this region, Greece jumps out at us. It's got a long history of winemaking. Great varieties that they use in Greece are ones that are not found anywhere else in the world. They've got a tremendous amount of grapes there that grow only in. They've made wine with these grapes over the years, and some good, some bad. It seems to be most of them have been bad, and they've had problems in not just Greece, but also all of Southern Europe, of finding a market, finding people who will buy these wines. And a lot of them do use a lot of their indigenous grapes, and because of that, it's not something that has been grasped, that has been grabbed by the world. So we don't really have an opportunity to see what these wines are like or anything, because most of them are just kept right in the country. Turkey could very well be a great wine region, but only about 3% of the grape production out of Turkey is turned into wine. And I read something fantastically interesting about Turkey, and I just want to throw this out since I just mentioned it. Turkey is the fifth largest area planted in vines in the world.
Wow.
I know, that was, and yet only 3% of those grapes are turned into wine. The rest of them are used as table grapes and as a fortified wine. They make a brandy, a form of brandy out of the grapes, and a lot of it's turned into brandy. But the fifth largest vineyard area in the world is out of Turkey. The island of Cyprus is also part of what we're going to be discussing a little bit more. They are actually a captive audience. So many tourists go to Cyprus. It's one of the great tourist regions of the world, and a great place to escape for Europeans and actually for all the world. And the most of the areas there is used as a tourist area, and wine has really not taken hold down there. There are some new ventures, new growers, and new wineries opening up that are trying to cash on the boom of wine in the world. And then Malta. We'll go into that little island a little bit more also when we talk about Southern Europe. But first, let's start with Greece. Greece is just an interesting area. Wine has been part of the Greek culture for actually over 3,000 years. They've got some of the great Greek philosophers have talked about wine in a lot of their writings and stuff. And through the ages, the location of Greece has really helped with the planting of grapes and with the spreading of the wines that they had and the viticulture success. Although the history of Greece has really been quite tumultuous, if we, to say, being conquered by many countries, being ran on their own, being set free. And because of this diverse history, the wine industry has also followed this pattern. They've also had some very great wine times and very poor wine times. And so the success and failures of the wine industry have closely mirrored the rise and falls of the country itself. Greece is mountainous with a lot of diversity of soils and types of soils and stuff. It's because of, and not just the soils, but because of the islands and everything else that are in, part of Greece, you get a big, big variety of different type of Greek wines that come out of the region there. The annual production in Greece is gallons, which are 400 million liters, which makes it about the sixth largest producer in Europe. So it's really quite a lot of grapes planted there. Although they do make a big variety of wines. The Greek wines break down to about 70% white wines, 5% rosés, 3% sweet wines, which are really a different category than red, white, and rosés, and 22% are the remaining of the red grapes, with sparkling wines being thrown in there a little bit. It's not really a percentage that would make a difference in the totals out of Greece. The native grapes provide the basis for a lot of fascinating wines coming out of the Greek winemaking areas and stuff. They've found approximately 200 indigenous Vitis vinifera varieties in about 30 different the whole area of Greece. Vitis vinifera is the grape, again, to remind you of the Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Merlot, all that. That's all the same family. And they found about 200 Vitis vinifera varieties identified in Greece, with about 30 of these being used commercially. Now, these are not the ones that we think of. Again, the ones I just mentioned, Cabernets and Chardonnays and Rieslings and Pinot Noirs and Pinot Grigios and all that. These are Greek grapes. The important white grapes are, and I will probably more than likely destroy these names, but I will try to say them again. Important white grapes are Azeritico, Athiri, Rhodetis, Salvatiano, Villana, Robola, Dibina, and Muscat. These are the white grapes used predominantly that are originally from Greece. And there's a couple of others that were almost extinct that they're planting more and more now. One of them called the Lagarthi, and then another one called the Malagosia. And then the Blanc de Gris Muscofilero is another one that is used quite often as a blend. Very acidic, very high in the acids. This grape is exclusive to the Mantinea area of Greece, but it's being used quite a bit for blending. They also use other varieties, ones we're quite familiar with, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Viognier, Semillon, and these are used as blending or just as varietal. They're mixing these with a lot of native grapes, or they're coming out with varietals. Again, like I mentioned at the very beginning, it's very difficult for someone to sell you a wine if it has something on it like a theory wine. You're going, huh? But if it says Sauvignon Blanc, you go, oh, I know this. And so it is one of the reasons why they're trying to do more blending and trying to bring up more common names, more names that we're familiar with. The red grapes are the two finest red grapes that are grown in Greece. Of the indigenous ones are, and I will never pronounce this right, it's spelled A-G-H-I-O-R-G-H-I-T-I-K-O.
Wow.
I got Sarigihitiko. I guess. I don't know. And then the other one is X-Y-N-O-M-A-V-R-O, Xynomavro, which are the two main planted grapes in the top red appellations. And Greece does divide their grape growing regions into appellations, into areas a lot like they do in France. In fact, the Greek standard for appellation system is modeled after the French method of grape of appellations, and so they've used this as a basis for all of their growth and everything that they've done there. So this is something that they have continued to do and continue to follow is the French style of appellations. Because of this, they now have 28 appellations of origin, which is the top style of appellation. And then they have two appellations by tradition and more than 70 vin de pays, which, again, if you don't know that, it's the table wines of Greece. That is the simple ones that you sell mostly to the people in in Greece. I'm sorry. I'm trying to pull up something here to look at a little map of Greece while I'm doing this, because Greece is really an odd-shaped country. It's not what you're normally used to in just your round country or your oblong. Greece has, it's along the coast, along the Mediterranean coast, the Aegean Sea, I'm sorry, I said Mediterranean, it's actually the Aegean Sea, which is leads into the Mediterranean coast. It is west of Turkey and south and east of the rest of Europe, all the European countries and everything that we are so familiar with. It is in the southeastern edge of those countries, again, east also of Italy. And so the Aegean Sea separates Greece from Turkey. So just to give you an idea of where the country is and what it consists of. The wine-growing regions of Greece are quite diverse. They're all over the country. And again, because of the location of it, even the islands surrounding Greece are a lot of big wine-growing regions. In 1980s, the Drama region of Greece was resurrected by two brothers who started to come in with modern methods. Napa style winery they built, big winery with tasting rooms and galleries and halls for lectures and seminars, and they started to make some good fruity soft fruit wines, actually the style, and it became very successful using again a lot of the native grapes and then some of the blending with some of the ones that we're used to, and this has really set this area into the Drama region in on the map as far as what they've been able to do. The next region, I'm going to pull up a couple of things here. I'm going to find out where the Drama region is. And I don't know. Next region, this is all mainland Greece, all these regions, but it's not showing me on any of the maps I'm looking at where the Drama region. Mainland Greece, another area is the Katima Grevassalu area, produces some fruit-driven white wine. They became very popular around Southern Europe and in Greece particularly. These wines give a minty taste, high acid, really the higher acid than what you would like, I think. I've had some of these before. They're popping. You can find these in quite a few places. But coming from the mainland of Greece, other areas in the mainland of Greece, Geomincia, light, fruity, crispy white wines, usually the style. Nassau, which long history of grape growing in this area too. And the trouble is because of its location, which is close to the mountains and the influence from the mountains and influence from the sea gives it an inconsistent vintage. 1 year could be absolutely great and wonderful. The next year, it could be horrible. Vintages really do make a difference in these areas. The cool region of Amadio has a lot of white wine growing out of there. Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Gewürztraminer, Blanc de Mort, and some very nice rosés. I mentioned the percentage of rosés coming out, 5% rosés. Most of that comes out of the Amadio region. Sparkling wines are also made in this area, but not a lot and not well noted. They use both methods, the cuvee close method and the method classique, which is the standard method that you use in France. The Belvin Dos region, which is again in the mainland area, in the southern part of the mainland area, is does more reds. It is a little bit drier there with good soil, more reds. Crania, Zitza, and Attica are all areas that are starting to become more and more pronounced and more and more noted in the mainland areas of Greece. These areas are recently, some of them have just been planted, and some of these states and large cooperatives are taking over some of these. The one of the largest vine planted areas in the 1950s and 60s has continuously shrunk because it is right outside of Athens, and Athens has been growing with leaps and bounds over the last 40, 50 years, that it's taken up the grape growing regions of the Attica region. The Peloponnese region produces about 29% of the Greek wines. The Peloponnese region is in the southeastern part of Greece. It's the bottom, actually it almost looks like an island if you look at it, because of the way the water crosses north of it and all that. So the Peloponnese region is in the southeast, sticking down in the bottom of the country of Greece. And this area here is three main regions: the Nemea, Petras, and Manatinia. The Manatinia area is more on hillsides, more of a plateau, higher elevation, 2,130 feet high plateau, 650-meter plateau, and they're coming out with some very nice gerber demeanors there, spicy, light gerber demeanor, and also some excellent muscat, a dry-style muscat from this region. Patros and Mia areas are quite diversified. They're red wines, white wines. They're putting a lot of different types of wines up in this area here, and they're located. Drama is located in the Maldania area between the coastal city of Kavala, I believe that's pronounced, and Yugoslavia. So the Drama area, again, what I mentioned at the beginning, one of the first regions, one of the main regions in the mainland there. It's located just up in that area. Agents Islands are located in the off the eastern coast of Greece. They are spread out throughout the Aegean Sea on the eastern coast. If you see almost due east and a little bit south of Athens into the Aegean Sea, you will run into the Aegean Islands there. There's quite a few Aegean Islands. It consists of Rhodes and Santorini and Samos, which are your biggest ones, and Crete is also the largest one. I don't think Crete is included in the Aegean Islands, though I think Crete is classified as an island itself, not in the group of Aegean Islands. The Limnos island in the Aegean Islands is a volcanic island, and they are producing a lot of sun-dried fortified Muscat of Alexandria wines. Now, this is an interesting thing I ran across while I was looking at this. It is a bone-dry wine made from the Muscat grape, and the Muscat grape used all is classified as a sweeter grape, and not the Muscatel or the stuff you hear, the all the classic drunks drinking, but the Muscat family is usually a sweet sweeter grape. And what they do is they dry the wine for a period of time outside, and then they put it in cask and they let it finish up. It's sun-dried grapes, basically almost like raisins. And it's not fortified. It doesn't have a higher alcohol, but it has a muscat, a peachy muscat flavor and a finish to it. A good finish, a very long finish. It just seems to linger in your throat for a long time after you swallow it. I've had these in the past. I hardly ever see them anymore, but a friend of mine used to just love these years ago, and he would, every chance he'd get, he'd pick up one of these and we'd share it. So, and that was reasonably priced at the time. Again, I haven't had one in quite a few years, so I don't know what they're going for now. Down in the Creek makes some unknown grape varieties, actually unknown to us, quite popular there. You're looking at the different ones that I mentioned earlier, the white muscat, the Sabiatino, Robola, Roditas, some of these that are grown in that area and only in that area. They do some reds also, which a pale, almost a rosé type red, only it's a red wine made from a grape that's grown in that area there. So the Crete wines really aren't well known, really aren't well distributed. They're becoming more and more so now. You can probably, if you do some search, find some wines from Crete, but not. It's going to take some searching, I'm sure. The last one of Greek islands, the Greek area, is the Ionian Sea Islands. The Ionian Sea Islands. The Ionian Sea Islands is located due west of the country of Greece. It is about almost due west of the city of Athens, across Peloponnese, and then north of Peloponnese in the Adriatic Sea. Well, I don't want to say Adriatic Sea because it's still too far south of the Adriatic. The Mediterranean Sea, that area there, south of the Adriatic Sea in the Mediterranean. The best vineyards you'll find in this area on limestone soils, they have a trademark, a lemon flint type terroir that's unique to these Greek vineyards here. It's soils really brought out some unique fruitiness and flinty, lemony taste. They are producing some very nice, very delicate Gentilini Classico wines, and also some Syrah that they're starting to put in the ground, getting some great results from. And then probably the best wine coming out of this area is called the Robola, R-O-B-O-L-A, the Robola. It's a grape, and it's picking up a lot of the peachy, flinty flavors, aromas, and aftertaste in this region. So Greece is got potential. It's always had potential. It just hasn't realized that potential, which is almost sad, because they do have a lot going for it there. So, well, moving on to Malta. Malta. The country, island country of Malta. Malta is located off the toe of Italy. Off the, if you look at Italy and the boot of Italy, Malta is off the toe of Italy. It is an independent country. It is. I'm sorry. I'm pulling up a map here so I can see. Exactly. Independent country. It is south of Sicily in the Mediterranean Sea. Rather small country. It's not real big at all. It's you off the toe of Italy, you'll have the island of Sicily, and then south of Sicily you will find Malta. It is north of Algiers, the African country of Algiers. And something just made a noise there. Off the north of Algiers and south of Sicily. It is 150 square miles or 390 square kilometers. We're rather small. The island of Malta itself is the largest island, 150 square miles. And then there's two other smaller islands that are off the northern tip of it, Gozo and Comino, I believe that's how it's pronounced. Gozo, G-O-Z-O, so it makes sense to be Gozo. And Comino, C-O-M-I-N-O. These islands of Malta, the Maltese Islands, 62 miles, 100 kilometers south of Sicily, and about 290 miles north of Tripoli in Libya. It is the host of some of the oldest civilizations in the world. Malta is classified as probably one of the centers of civilization. This is back when the whole world was Pangaea, one big country, and Malta was all just right in the middle of it all. Winemaking in this area began over 500 BC. A classic example of old wine, old vineyards and everything that have been dug up and replanted, dug up and replanted. Malta now is basically a tourist vacation spot. Europe, United States, African, even Asia, a lot of people go to Malta as a vacation spot. So there's not a lot of emphasis on wine because of that, being only 150 square miles in the main island and the other two being much smaller. There's not a lot of room to take care of all of your vacationers and start planting vineyards, but they do have some vineyards planted. White table grapes known as Gringentina and Gennaro, I think it's pronounced, and the red Gelewa, G-E-L-L-E-W-Z-A. Mike, if you can pronounce that more correctly.
No. I'm going to try that one.
Yeah. These are blended with a lot of imports from Italy for years and years and years. And this is what they how they made these wines, and just using a small amount of Maltese grapes. The local authorities in Malta have cracked down on this practice, though, and they're starting to force them that they want to make Malta wines have to use Malta grapes. And since the 1970s, late 70s, mid 80s, they've been doing this, planting a lot more focusing on planting a lot more grapes and trying to get more plantings of grapes that we know and that people can understand instead of the three that I just destroyed the names on. A lot of Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Bianco, Trebbiano, and Syrah are being planted now, and a lot of wines being made grapes. And it's a lot of the tourists are enjoying this. There's a lot of this wine is being sold to the local tourists, and since they have such a diversity of tourists, it is amazing how much they are selling. Winemaking practices have improved, but not really world class yet. I mean, there's just not a lot of money in the area, not a lot of money to be making wines. Again, concentration is on tourists and not anything else. Some of the best wines come from Paradise Bay red wine called a Gioluzza Frizzante, and this is really the one that's sold most often around the country, and if there's any exports, this is when you're usually going to find. A recent player in the wine industry is a winery called Meridiania, and this is producing some international style wines, including a lot of barrel fermented Chardonnays, Cabernets, Merlots, and with some minor success in some of the local grapes, but not so much because of these others. So it's Malta's is a boutique country, if you will, as far as wine goes. It's not really mainstream, but it's something that people can look for, that you can enjoy if you find it, if you're ever around that part of the world and that part of the country, or that part of the islands or anything around Italy. It would probably be worth trying to find some out of Malta. And if you do find some out of Malta, give them, or send me one, because I'm starting to get wines from around the world pretty soon here, and I'm going to have a hard time, I think, getting Malta. Turkey. Got to talk about Turkey. Whenever I go to look for these things, whenever I go to talk about these different wines in different countries and stuff, I try to pull up information on countries and look at the maps and just give myself a little background and stuff, just so I can see what's going on, what's happening with it, and a little bit more about the country. Interesting, Turkey's got a tremendously long history. It's amazing, the history of Turkey and how it has influenced the countries in the world in that part of the, or the growth and everything in that part of the world. Turkey is divided up into so many different provinces and so many different regions and districts and stuff. It's so speckled, so diversified, that it's amazing that they can do anything there with any type of consistency, because every one of the areas has an autonomous government, yet they all answer to the central government and all that. This Turkey is divided into 81 provinces for administrative purposes, and these provinces are organized into 7 regions, and each province is then divided into districts, for a total of 923 districts. And, you know, when you think about it, though, that's not too different than what we have here in the States, and the fact that we have states and we have counties. But the way the hierarchy is explained in all this stuff I've read about Turkey, then it just seemed odd to me. And anybody from Turkey who wants to email me and explain to me, I will be more than happy to correspond with you and understand more, because it was just fascinating what I read and what I found out. But did Noah plant grapes when he landed on Mount Ararat? Who knows? History, the myth, the story goes that he did, and that's how Turkey came to be actually the cradle of viticulture. Again, like I said earlier, Turkey has a fifth of the vines that are planted in the world, and so they have a lot of grapevines planted, but Turkey is a majority predominantly Muslim country. And because of Muslims' non-alcoholic ideals in their religion and in their lifestyles, only about 3% of the grapes are fermented into wine.
Wow.
And of this 3%, at least a quarter of that is distilled into a brandy, or into an anise-flavored spirit called raki, R-A-K-I, raki, raki, raki. White wine is probably used most often than not in Turkey. It's the major grape, although it tends to be very heavily oxidized, overaged. Reds are not made well. Most of the reds coming out of Turkey are very alcoholic, and from what I've read, 3 or 4 different places, way too much sulfite is used in it to protect it during shipping and during, or even during transport around the country of Turkey. And good wines is not synonymous with Turkey. It's sad to say, but Turkey is really not noted for good wine. My son had a very good friend in college from Turkey, and he and I talked about wines a couple of times, and he always started the conversation whenever I mentioned wines by shaking his head no, and knowing how little Turkey was for wine production. Turkey has 7 official wine districts. They are the Thras, Marmara, the Aegean Coast, the Mediterranean Coast, and Turkey, to fill you in too, and just to let you know, not that anybody's idiots out there, but just to let you know, Turkey is a rather large country. It is bordered on the north by the Black Sea and on the south by the Mediterranean Sea, and it's got a lot of Egypt and Syria and all those are to the south of it, on the east south of it. So Turkey is, a rather large country. I was trying to find earlier what something we can relate to and what state size. I never did find something on that. Mike, maybe you can for me.
Okay.
I would appreciate it if you could. I couldn't find anything on it, but Turkey is rather large area. I mean, it's 302,500 square miles, so it's rather large. But these areas, the Black Sea coast, the Ankara, Central Anatolia, and Eastern Anatolia. These areas are actually speckled throughout the country, central Turkey, and on the coast. Turkey. Oh, here we go. Thank you, Mike. Turkey is slightly larger than the state of Texas, so it's rather large. Texas being second largest state, so it is a rather large country. The wine growing areas here are, like I say, in the central part of the country, and on the southern parts, there's an area that borders with Syria, and then on up in the western edge of it, northwestern edge of it. So a lot of these, the Black Sea coast is way on up. There's areas that are nothing too far east on Turkey. Most of these areas are in the central and on the west. The Thras Marmara produces 40% of Turkey's wines, and it's usually focused on grapes like the Claret, the Semillon, the Riesling, Gamay, and Pinot Noir. The Aegean coast yields a lot of the European varieties, Semillon, Grenache, Carignan. Mediterranean coast is more tourist oriented than it is winemaking oriented, but there's a few small wineries on the Mediterranean coast, not a lot of area planted in grapes. The central Anatolia area is very high elevation, 4,000 feet or 1,250 meters. Because of its elevation, a lot of temperature extremes, which makes it difficult to continue grapes throughout the year because it could have late frost, early rains, early frost, any number of things could cause problems. The eastern Anatolia, bordering Georgia and Armenia, yields only about 374 gallons per acre, or about 3,500 liters per acre. A small amount, a very small amount. We try to trim our grapes, most of us here in the United States and around the world, try to trim grapes back to 5 tons an acre, which produces a tremendous amount of wine. So when you're only looking at 374 gallons per acre, then you can really tell that the grapes are battling to even produce that much fruit. The nationalized wine industry in Turkey is administered by TEKEL, T-E-K-E-L. There are some private producers, but not very many. Most of the wines are not well made, not well liked, not a lot of modern techniques, and that really explains it more than anything. The lack of modern techniques is really what hurts it more than anything else. So turkey has a potential, and if you look at, I've mentioned this before about the bands around the world, the southern Europe, well, the area we're talking about now, ranges from about 30 degrees north to 40 degrees north longitude. That's around the world, right? Longitude.
Mm-hmm.
30 degrees north to 40 degrees north longitude, which latitude. Okay, yeah. Longitude's up and down, latitude's around. Okay, 30 to 40 degrees north latitude. This is. Most of the United States is in this. This is it encompasses New York State, all the way up to Napa Valley, south of Canada, though. It's the central part. And then northern Europe jumps up a little bit higher, which covers Canada and stuff like that. So southern Europe really is in the same area, the same latitude as Napa Valley, in that area there, whereas the rest of Europe really puts it up a little bit warmer. But Europe is influenced by the Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea and all this, which does control the climate a lot more than what you find in the States. And so when you start getting into southern Turkey, though, you're in Turkey, it is a little bit warmer. It's about 35 degrees, 38 degrees north. It's still north of Florida by quite a bit. Florida is all the way down here in about 28 degrees north. So it is still quite a bit better climate than Florida. So that's Turkey. And Cyprus. We'll end up with Cyprus here tonight. Cyprus is located in the Cyprus is located in the area that is between south of Turkey and north of Lebanon, Syria, Israel. That area is located in the Mediterranean Sea. It is shaped, and please, if anyone's from Cyprus, I am not saying this as derogatory. It's shaped like a dead animal skin. It's when you look at it, it looks like it's got the 2 feet and the tail going north, and then the head is, you know, looks like it's a skin flattened out. And you know, so really, what when you look at the country, is what it looks like. Again, I apologize. I'm not trying to offend anyone. But that's what it reminded me of. Cyprus is really planted in grapes all over. I mean, the whole country is a grape growing region. It's amazing how much area is planted there. Yet nothing really stands out. They do a lot of grapes. They've been making wine for around 4,000 years. Some of the earliest archaeological digs have shown wine that dated to second millennium B.C. Wine trade flourished around that area. I mean, you know, when you start looking at the areas and the different places that can influence it, it's in the perfect spot to be influenced by everything. But it is it just never has caught on. Back in 1570-71. When the Turks invaded the island, they imposed some strong restrictions on it. Being Muslim, again, they continued to put strong restrictions on the country, and it really restricted the alcohol and the wine business. Grapes were continued to be made, but it was used a lot for raising grapes and other purposes. When the British took over in 1878, it started to improve. Cypriot winemaking did a little bit of a rebound, but then two world wars, which affected that area very strongly, and since then, the continuation of ups and downs of economies and stuff, and the wine industry in Cyprus has actually it's declined over the years, and right now not real strong. The principal grape growing areas lie in the southeastern plains on the slopes of the Troodos Mountains, but there's a lot of areas that are real fertile and are irrigated, and there's a lot of table grapes growing out of there, which would be easy enough to switch over to wine grapes if the country wanted to. There's Mavro grape, the Greek word for black, which is one of the big grapes grown in the area of Cyprus and for the vineyards there, and it makes a from what I read, an undescript, undistinguished type wine. Six regions in Cyprus: Pitsilia region, the Mahari region, the Troodos North, the Marathessa, the Commanderia, the Troodos South, and a couple sub-regions of Athamas and Leona and the Troodos South, and the Troodos West with a couple with three sub-regions, Ambelus, Voentis, Panayas, and Leonia Katikas. These are I say the primary region. It's not a lot of vineyards planted, very dry areas in some of these. A few boutique-style wineries and productions are generally a primitive-style production in these areas with not a lot of modern techniques or modern styles of making, a lot of old methods. And trade restrictions are plaguing the country. Cyprus has a lot of trade restrictions that are still haunting them. Treasure of Cyprus is probably the Commanderia, one of the world's oldest sun-dried or raisin wines. It's a specialty coming out of Cyprus. The Greek poet Hesiod in about 800 BC recommended the procedure for drying these grapes. He said, let the sun dry them for 10 days and 10 nights, then cover them over for another 5 days, and on the sixth day, draw off whatever juice is left. And he said, and it will be a joyous drink for the gods. A very dry, raisiny style wine. To me, I have a hard time understanding how that would be any good, but hey, you know, different strokes. You know. They have different methods now. Now they're using to make this thing, they're aging 2 years in wood, and they're undergoing a Solera aging process, which is Solera, the sun aging process, that three-tier Solera before bottling it. And then they're selling it in wine shops in the island and around the country, which they're not getting a whole lot out of it. So because of that, because there's no real market for it, it's starting to decline. The quality is declining, and the quantity is declining, which, you know, the Commanderia is the name of the wine. This is the primary wine for Cyprus, and it just may not be made that much longer if it continues on decline and happen to be made by certain standards set up by the country. And that takes care of Southern Europe.
Wow. That's... We're actually
actually on time.
Yeah, we're a little early there. Let's see.
A little early. South Africa next week.
There we go. Okay.
South Africa. We're going to talk about South Africa. South Africa is fascinating. I started to check some stuff about South Africa, and it'll be a fascinating thing. So you know, everyone's going to come back next week and listen about South Africa. It's located... most of the wine region of South Africa is located down along the coast and around the edge of the country, down at the tip. That's where the Dutch East India Company identified Table Bay as a suitable site for establishing a colony. And When they did that, they assigned a man by the name of Johan van Rijbeck as the commander of this company and as commander of this area. And van Rijbeck ordered grape seeds and cuttings to be sent to him because he wanted the thought this would be a good area to put in some grape seeds and cuttings, and it has blossomed, it has boomed, it has, you know, sprouted from that. So,
wow.
So just a quick introduction to just
And that'll be next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's U.S. Eastern Time. And, yeah, we'll have to definitely add that to our description. I've been editing these as we go. So when I reserve the spot on Blog Talk Radio, I reserve them like 4 weeks ahead of time, and then I go in and put the subject in.
Oh, cool.
That kind of works. Kind of affects everything. Very interesting. Down at the winery this weekend, you don't have anything planned. I didn't see anything on the website. So
no, nothing. Nothing scheduled this week. Although we do have a festival coming up next week, and no class scheduled in the immediate future. But if anybody out there wants to attend the class, by all means, give us a call. We had a group of teachers a couple of weeks ago that wanted to put together a class. We put together their special classes for the teachers, which is always nice. And
is it a mixture of teachers? I mean, is it do you find that it's you know, college, high school, elementary? I mean, who
it,
is it?
It was this is college high school teachers.
Okay.
That all got together and scheduled a class. Actually, one of the people that was in the class had attended a class two or three years ago and started telling all of his friends about it, and they all decided to attend. So
that's cool.
So it was a nice class. So we had a good time, and I, you know, fought the urge to yell at him, tell him to shut up and sit down and be good and listen.
get the ruler out.
Get the ruler out. It was a good class.
Very good. I guess we'll see everybody back here next Thursday. That would be sometime in February. I gotta have to get my calendar. February 11th.
The 11th, yeah. Today is the 4th, so it'll be the 11th. Yeah, 7th.
So in 7 days, we'll see everybody back here, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We have an official outro. I guess we can go ahead and play. That should come in. And thank you, Ron, and everybody out there listening. Thank you. We'll see you.
Thank everyone for tuning in today, too.
Absolutely. And the outro, and we'll see you all next time. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
This concludes our call-in talk show for the evening. Special thank you to Ron Hunt of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Visit the winery online at www.floridaestateswines.com. That's WINES.com. Email address for the winery is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com. Or call area code 813-996-2113. If you're in the area, Florida Estates Winery is located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For information on our show and music stream, visit us on our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/ChicoDawg1. That's DAWG and the number 1. Email address is podcast@ChicoDawg.com. Follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/MikeWCFL. WCFL as in Wesley Chapel, Florida. If you have a topic you would like to discuss on air, please contact me. Chico Dawg Live is a weekly talk show hosted on Blog Talk Radio. We encourage our listeners to participate in our online chat room or call us on air at 646-727-3235 and tell your friends and family about us. This episode will be available as a free download on iTunes and our Blog Talk Radio show page. Thank you for listening to the program. We'll see you next week on Chico Dawg Live.
We're not. Nope.
So. second. Goodbye, Block Talk Radio.
Goodbye, Block Talk Radio. 1,000 mics and everybody, and we should be done.
1,000 mics gone.